Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Hot Sheet Show, and we are jumping right into it today. J.J. Cooper and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America, but more importantly, Rays pitcher Brody Hopkins is joining us as he has before. Welcome back to the show. Congrats on the season. Congrats on the Futures game. We're in August. How does it feel as a minor league baseball player at the end of August in a season that started, it feels like many months ago at this point? You know, what does it feel like as a minor league player?
Man, it's a grind. Spending 10, 11 hours at the field every day, 6 days a week, you get one off day. I mean, it's tough, but I mean, if you love it, you're gonna go out and grind and just keep working your butt off every day. And I love it. I think it's really fun showing up, playing a game every day, you know, playing the game you grow up loving. It's pretty cool.
Again, you've had kind of the season where we've talked to you earlier this year, but since then, probably one of the most important things is you were a Futures gamer and you went out there and you shoved. What is it like to go out there? You obviously want to perform in a moment like that, but what is it like to be in the Futures game? And what is it like when you go out there and you get to show what you can do?
Yeah, I think it's a unbelievable blessing that I was in a grateful opportunity for me to be able to get, you know, selected for it. And I couldn't tell you what I was thinking during the game. I couldn't tell you what happened, what pitch I threw, when. I just know that it was 9 pitches and it was really quick. But I mean, it was unbelievable. The feeling, the memories, the emotions, having my family there. It was all just one big whirlwind, and it was just perfect.
As you said, like, you had a ton of family there, didn't you? Like, I mean, it was,
yeah, I had like 15 people. Yeah.
So when you get back to them after the game and meet back up, I mean, did they probably, was it a bigger deal for you or maybe a bigger deal for them?
No, I mean, it was a huge deal for me. Just cause I mean, 3 years ago, I was not sure where I was going to be playing college ball at. And so like going from that to here, they know how big it was for me. And I think it was just kind of, they were just happy for me and they wanted to be there for me. And that's just, I really don't even know how to explain it. It's just one big, you know, everybody was just happy. Everybody was, you know, just excited, just really grateful for everything that happened there.
Yeah. And I would imagine just the overall season too, like in a lot of ways that kind of has to be the cherry on top, but you know, as you talked about, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, you didn't even know necessarily where you're going to be playing college ball the next year. You know, going to the transfer portal, really establish yourself, I think, is an interesting draft prospect. You end up with Seattle, and even that first year, you end up getting traded. So, you know, you've been at one level so far this season in AA, really, you know, the majority, obviously, of the season. One organization, you get to go to the Futures game. I would imagine it's got to be just much more settled in. And how much do you think that has had an impact on just everything ticking up a little bit, the command, the stuff, and the execution in game?
I think it's all been really just experience and reps. And I feel like game by game, I feel like I just improve and I learn a little bit more. And I can, like, if like last year, I don't think I could have called the game on my own, but now I feel confident in that. Like, if what a catcher puts down isn't something that I'm really confident in, I know I've got a different pitch in mind. Like, now I feel confident in doing that. And I feel like I'm confident in judging swings and like what I think they're looking for. It's just like, just being a complete pitcher is what I feel like has been the thing that's been kind of going in the right direction for me.
So like Jeff said, you were a Mariner and you're traded to the Rays last year, and something happened with you that I've seen happen with a lot of pitchers when they join the Rays. I think you had a 59% strike percentage last year with the Mariners, 60% last year after you joined the Rays. This year at 62%. you're not the only one. This seems like something that the Rays are really good at. And obviously as part of it is you're working on it too. I don't want to take your part out of it, but what is it that happens? Like, is there a magic formula that the Rays, or is it just something where it's just the development that comes with, you know, with maturation and more time on the mound?
I think it was, when I came over, really what they told me and they wanted me to do was just kind of just throw everything like to the heart of the zone, just kind of throw everything down the middle, kind of just throw everything through the middle of the plate and let my stuff do what it does. And I kind of at first took it with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I was like, if I just throw it down the middle, it's going to get hit. But then I started to realize that my stuff really plays. And so if I do that and get everything in the zone, I'm going to generate a lot more swing and miss. And so I just started pounding the zone. And I feel like that's what has really helped me so far.
With your stuff, I mean, again, the thing that does jump out about it, I remember talking to other Rays pitchers about this. If you aim for the middle of the zone with your kind of stuff, you don't end up always, or don't end up even regularly, right in the middle of the zone, do you?
No, not regularly.
Bigger target now. It gives you 18, you know, yeah. Gives you 18 inches to aim for.
Yes, sir.
I also wanted to follow if I can jump in. When we talked to the futures game, I know we talked about your pitches. You kind of showed me some of your pitch grips, that sort of thing. You mentioned there were a couple pitches that you had thrown previous years that you weren't throwing now. I know the arsenal's obviously sort of always expanding, adjusting, sometimes contracting as well. What are you throwing right now? And, you know, in terms of like cues and stuff, like you were talking about earlier, when are you trying to throw your slider? When are you trying to throw your four seam, et cetera? And what sort of like areas are you targeting?
Yeah. So right now I'm throwing a four seam, like a curveball, death ball kind of thing, change up and a cutter. And so my thought process is really just kind of just throw it through the middle. Like when I hold my four seam, I'm trying to generate as much carry as I can, because I have low arm slot, you know, all that stuff that the Rays have kind of taught me. And so I've just been trying to throw the four seam through the catcher's mask. I've been trying to rip the cutter off of a righty's front elbow. And with my changeup, I just kind of throw it at my catcher's right shoulder and just kind of let it do its thing. And then with the curveball, I just kind of throw it as hard as I can straight down the middle. I just rip it. That's really all I think about with it.
So, Brody, earlier this month, you faced Columbus. He had probably what I would say watching it was one of your better starts I've seen of your pro career. Seven innings, you know, no runs. You go seven, you strike out 10. Did that kind of pretty similar to that, I think, about a month before that. But when you have an outing like that, does it feel any different? I mean, do you know kind of when you're taking the mound, hey, I think I've really got it tonight? Or does it kind of more come to you as the game goes on?
I would say it depends. I say it would depend on the day. I never go into a start thinking I don't got it that day, because I feel like I usually do. But no, I think that just like some of those starts where it's like I'm getting a lot of swing and miss early. So I know, like, if I start getting swing and miss early in the first inning, I know that I'm going to be successful throughout the whole game. But if they're putting the ball in play early, I know it's going to be probably a grind to get through five, get through six, because pitch count's going to be a little up. They're going to be taking more, being more cautious. But if a team is swinging early, then I know that like I'll be perfectly fine throughout that game.
Want to follow real quick on this one. We did talk about how you've been with, you know, in the Southern League all year. Do you think you're going to get a chance to visit JJ up in Durham anytime soon? Any chance there's a AAA promotion coming in the next week or two?
You know, I try my best not to think about stuff like that. I mean, obviously it's going to be in the back of your head when you're having a good year, but I mean, I'm just kind of trusting the process, kind of trusting what the Rays are telling me. And if it's not Durham in a week or at the end of the year, then it is what it is. I mean, I've just finished the season strong here. Try to, you know, maintain my goal that I set for myself this year and just go from there. I mean, I can't control getting called up. I can't control any of that. So I'm just going to worry about what I got going on in Montgomery.
Well, whether it's in Montgomery or up here where I am in Durham, we wish you the best for the rest of the season. Congrats on the season so far. And I know if nothing else, I'm going to see you before too long, one way or another here in Durham, because, you know, whether it's this year or next year, like I said, that's not a control board for you, but the way you're going, be stunned if I'm not seeing you before too long. And hopefully, again, not for too long, you know, see you for a little while and then, you know, wish you the best as you head off to Tampa Bay. But thank you for joining us, Brody. Thank you again. Best of luck for the rest of the season. And we will be back right after this quick break.
Okay, KP, this is your first Arena Club experience. We're going to open a slab pack together. So first off, we're going to buy one of those $25 slab packs. And we get to see what is in the pack. There it is. The Grail, which is the best card in the pack and worth the most. There are some other cards that we're chasing, and you can see the entire lineup so that you know what you're in the running for. There's the Yamamoto signed card. Now, let's open up our pack and see how we do. We have ourselves a really cool graphic, and then a Shohei Ohtani 50-50 card from last year. What do you want to do? Should we sell it right back to them for 16, or should we keep it?
You should give it to me. I'll keep it.
Good answer. Fine. I will give it to you. Since the Blue Jays didn't get Ohtani, you can get this 50-50 card instead. Use the code FOUL, F-O-U-L, to get yourself 20% off your first slab pack or card purchase. Yes, you get to keep that card if you want it. They send it to you. F-O-U-L at arenaclub.com/foul.
When your business has an opening that you needed to fill yesterday, there's an easy answer to your problem. How do you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. For us, Indeed has made hiring easy time after time. We get great candidates who find us on Indeed, and we can do the entire hiring process all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I just took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and I will soon discover my biological age. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. This morning, I took the True Age test. It was easy. I answered a few questions on my phone, watched a video that showed me how to perform the test, pricked my finger. I didn't even feel the prick, to be honest. Provided a sample, then dropped the sample in a mailbox. It's a prepaid envelope, so I didn't even need to go to the post office. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get a detailed online report about my aging and health, fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BA2022 to get 20% off of your entire order subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BA2022 at checkout to get 20% off your order. Your future self will thank you. Meep, meep. Hey everybody, we've got Jacob Rudner joining us, and Jacob is going to, I'm going to hand over the baton here, and Jacob is going to take over as host as we dive in to the, we were talking about Brody Hopkins about call-ups and promotions. We also have had some notable ones, some ones that maybe we're still looking for. And we had the news, I'll kick it to you, Jacob, of Samuel Basayo is not only up, but Samuel Basayo is a very wealthy man.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, a deal that lines his pockets, 8 years, $67 million extension. 2034 is an option there. It can extend the deal. $88.2 million is the total value. It lines his pockets. But the question, JJ, is this deal good for baseball at large? Are we seeing a troubling trend here with deals like this for young players like Passaio?
I would say it's trouble for the MLBPA, right? Like, if you're talking about baseball as large, I don't know, because you can see the argument. You can see the argument many ways. And the thing I would also say with that is that for each individual player, the player understandably has to act in their own best interest. If you're Samuel Passaio, this is a level of financial security that he will never, his family will never have to worry about money again if he invests in any way semi-wisely, because this is life-changing generational wealth, obviously. But if you look at it from the standpoint of the MLBPA, I would say that this is a little bit of a troubling trend, because Passaio is one of the players who, if he hadn't signed an extension, he could sign a break the bank deal as a free agent down the road. Because if you look at it, the way to make the most money in free agency is be one of those players who hits free agency as a 26, 27 year old, you know, go into your age 27 season where you are one of the youngest players in free agency, where your peak may still be ahead of you, where a team could be saying, as we saw with Juan Soto, hey, I'm going to pay you massive money because I'm looking ahead and saying, I'm not paying on past performance. I think that you're going to be a top tier player for the next 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, where you can make kind of that, okay, we're paying a ton of money, but we're still getting a bargain because of how good this player is. Messiah was going to be one of those guys potentially, because he reached the majors just after his 21st birthday. We've seen that with Passaio. We also saw earlier this year an extension for Roman Anthony, who also could have been a break the bank type of player in free agency years down the road. We've seen this a lot of recently. We saw this with, you know, Jackson Churio as well. We saw this with Jackson Merrill. That's the thing that does jump out here is if you're the MLBPA, these are the players who, by not just getting a big free agent deal, but are the ones who, when they go to arbitration, set arbitration records, which kind of brings the arbitration numbers up for everyone else as well. Well, MLB teams have figured out, hey, we can sign these players to extensions, keep them out of arbitration, keep them out of free agency. And the risk on a team side isn't that much, because if you look at it, yes, you can find examples like an Evan White or, examples like that, where you say, okay, it didn't work out for the team. Jonathan Singleton, it didn't work out for the team. They signed an extension, but the money that they risk is so modest in comparison to, I will just give you this example. If you look at Ronald Acuna and Juan Soto, Acuna signed an extension, Soto did not, and just signed a free agent deal, right? They came up at the same, basically within a month of each other in 2018. Juan Soto makes more money per year, or the same amount of money, I should say, each year as Ronald Acuna makes in the three largest years of his extension. Ronald Acuna is making $17 million per year in his extension. Juan Soto is making $51 million. And by the way, before he hit free agency, Juan Soto also was over $20 million ahead of what Ronald Acuna is making, because Ronald Acuna signed an extension. Again, that doesn't mean that was a bad decision for Ronald Acuna necessarily. He has had two knee injuries, but it does stand out that for teams, there is a giant advantage potentially of being a team and signing one of these extensions.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing that's troubling, getting back to the sort of the original question about, you know, the MLBPA and is it bad for baseball or not? You know, I think that we're all familiar with all the different things that have happened over the last couple of years and preceding that, in terms of teams sort of calling guys up late, manipulating service time, all those nasty things we don't like to talk about. You know, there's been procedures, the PPI, things put in place. This is the new manipulation. I mean, as JJ said, it impacts what the standard is that's set in arbitration, because so many of these guys don't get into arbitration now if they're this good. And it's also sort of exploiting this system where they have so much control and they can leverage whether you're going to be in AAA until the end of September, or whether you're going to be in the big leagues in August, sort of against you to try to get you to sign this. And, you know, they're offering you more often than not generational money. And I think that's sort of what the big question is like, this is already having a negative impact on the arbitration system. It's having a negative impact on free agency. And I think what's going to end up happening is like, in this current system, this is going to keep happening. We think there's going to be discussions about, you know, the salary cap, things of that nature, once the CBA is discussed in a few years. I think this is something that maybe for the player side of things might make more of a case for there being a salary cap so they can't circumnavigate this. And what they trade away is maybe the high-end dollars that go to Shohei Ohtani, that go to Juan Soto, but you're getting players to free agency in year four or something along those lines. That way, guys are able to hit the market at peak potential, make more money. The middle ground makes a lot more in this particular scenario. So I think it's just, it's sort of the late stage of this CBA and what the current economics are like in baseball. And in some ways, it's good for players. I'm glad that they're getting big contracts. But as JJ just laid out, if you're willing to make that bet in yourself like Juan Soto did, you can earn substantially more money. And, you know, that's got to be, you know, for the whole industry of baseball, not just even the players, all the cottage industries around it, the agents, everything else. It's not a good development, in my opinion. And this is the kind of thing where if you go through, you know, interviews with teams, they're asking you questions about players and how you would structure an extension for a player now as part of your questionnaires. So it is pervasive. It is part of every front office's process if they're even remotely tuned into what they should be tuned into now. And you can't blame the front offices and you can't necessarily blame the teams because it's the system that's set up and it's, you know, the best thing for them. And as JJ kind of laid out, there's very little risk for the team. You sign a Scott Kingery and it doesn't work out, great. But if you save money on Acuna, you save money on Albies, you save money on Roman Anthony, these are potential, maybe not Albies, but a few of those guys are potential Hall of Fame level type of talents. Lock those guys up for the best years of their career. And you know what the dollars are going 10 years out. The other part of it is with inflation and everything else, these contracts, you know, the ninth, 10th year aren't even necessarily worth the same real dollars that they're worth in the moment that they sign them. So I think there's a lot of elements to this that are kind of funky. You know why teams are doing it, but I think players are leaving a lot of money on the table.
We're going to talk about some more standout youngsters right after we take a quick break. We'll be right back.
FT fam, welcome to the world's most comfortable swimwear. For a moment, we are talking about Fair Harbor. We actually have some show and tell today. This is the liner that you're working with inside of the shorts and the bathing suits.
You know what the best part is about this, Scott?
What?
They have a lot of different options because these are clearly yours because I would never order this pattern, but that is so
me.
On you.
That is so me.
These are so you. Mine are a little bit more plain than this.
Yes.
But they are super comfortable. The liner, I love liner shorts. Some people don't. But these liners are better than most that I've had on, if not all of them.
Yeah, this is the best liner out there.
No mesh. All of the above is perfect.
Exactly. It's really good. You got to give it a shot. Also, fun random fact, you get a new shirt. It smells really good. So head to fairharborclothing.com/Fal and use code Fal for 20% off your first purchase. Once again, fairharbor, H-A-R-B-O-R clothing.com/F-O-U-L for 20% off your first purchase and use that promo code Fal so they know FT sent you.
Well, it's that time of year where top prospects start to get into the conversation to reach the big leagues. And if you're paying attention to Baseball America, there's one really popular guy in the Mets system. Jonah Tong has been outstanding this year. He's a front runner to win our Minor League Player of the Year award. He's looking outstanding. He's in AAA. Is there a chance, Jeff, that we see him pitch for New York before the end of the season?
I don't think it's as improbable as we probably would have thought it was 2 or 3 weeks ago when he hadn't even been called up to AAA yet. Since these last few starts, his first two AAA starts where he still hasn't allowed an earned run over 11 or 12 innings, I'd have to look. He's dominated. You know, we have public Hawkeye data and the stuff looks phenomenal. So any of those counts that are out there that on Twitter and other social media that are talking about the analytical side of it, he's getting that buzz. He's got the Mets fan base buzzing. And then I think on top of it, you know, we saw Nolan McLean get called up and has been really, really good in the big leagues. The Mets rotation overall, kind of subpar. It's a potential playoff team. I think there's a lot of smoke here that Tong could potentially, you know, make his debut with the Mets within the next few weeks. There's no reason not to. I would imagine that even the 40-man roster sort of considerations here probably aren't a big deal, simply because you're going to have Tong in the 40-man roster next year anyway. So there's no reason not to. I think when you look at the stuff, you know, there's some question. Is it maybe a two-pitch guy predominantly? Sure. We've seen some of those guys perform very well very early and not be figured out by the league. You know, obviously Spencer Strider being the extreme example, you know, Jared Jones being another one a few years ago. And you know, I think that calling him a two-pitch pitcher, despite the fact that so much of the usage this year has been relying on that four-seam fastball and that changeup, it's really about the quality. Because if you talk to a lot of evaluators about the 2024 version of Tong, they all had 55s to 60s in the slider. And yeah, it's ticked back a little bit this year, but that's still in there. So and the curveball's a usable pitch early in count. So I do think there's four pitches here. It will be interesting to see how he navigates in an MLB lineup and what sort of, you know, things trip him up. But I do really think that when we look at this player, he's an outlier. It's an outlier, unusual operation. But he just does things that other guys don't do, generates lots of swings and misses. And, you know, there just hasn't been a lot of hard contact against him this year at any level.
The thing I would say is yes, I would say bring him up in September. I would say that to me, bring him up to relief, not because you don't think he can start long-term, but I do think to what Jeff just said, this is a really unusual delivery. It's really over the top, much more so than you're used to seeing from a pitcher. Kind of a little bit of a funky delivery as well. If you're a hitter and you only get to see Jonah Tong once, I don't think that you're going to have a really comfortable at bat. To what Jeff said, maybe if you see him a second or a third time as a starter and you go, okay, he's really fastball changeup dependent, maybe I can figure it out a little bit. But if you're picking those spots and you're saying, hey, this is just going to be another elite arm that we add to our pen for now. Long-term, he can be a starter, but right now we're trying to win right now. Add him to a pen that obviously already spent a lot of trade capital and finances at the trade deadline to improve. I think the Tong could really make an impact and could be very useful for them, not just in September, but in October.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Hot Sheet Show. We want to thank everybody who tuned in. Make sure you head on over to baseballamerica.com. Yes, JJ.
I wanted to add one more thing real quick, which is just we have more call-ups like this. Check them out over at Baseball America. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Harlan Susanna, who, by the way, we'll talk about on another Hot Sheet Show because I can't help but drool about the 102, 103, you could even round up to 104 that he's shown as a starter this year. But he also has a 94-mile-an-hour changeup that touched 95 and a slider. We didn't even get to him today because we had so much power pack show. Sorry, back to you, Jake.
Well, with that being said, head on over to baseballamerica.com. Check out all of our content on our prospects. I want to thank Brody Hopkins for hopping on the show today. And make sure you like and subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel. We will see you next time.